The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul. I'm with Bob Cardoza. He's president of FirstServe Residential's West Region. We're going to talk about HOAs. One of the most reviled acronyms out there, I would say. Why reviled? Because HOA or homeowners associations are often associated with people who don't want to be told what to do with their property, or there's dues that go up and it's, why am I paying so much for my dues? But on the other hand, if you live in an HOA community, as I do, and in fact, I even sit on the HOA board in my community, the thing that people love about HOAs is that they take care of the property. They make sure people play by the rules as best they can so that those property values are held steady. But what makes a good HOA? What's the real value to HOAs for real estate investors, not just residents, but the real estate investors, property developers and managers and so on? You know, these are the sorts of things that we want to talk about today with Bob Cardoza. Now, I mentioned that he's president of FirstService Residential's West Region. FirstService Residential is a property management company for both residential and commercial properties. It partners with boards, owners, and developers in an effort to enhance the value of every property it can and the life of every resident living in those properties. And that would include, obviously, HOAs or homeowners associations. So FirstService Residential collaborates with developers in new communities to create and improve HOAs. And Bob Cardoza comes to this assignment with quite a list of let's say that his pedigree is good. He's a certified community associate manager from the California Association of Community Managers. He is also a member of the Building Industry Association and the Urban Land Institute. Serves on a variety of building industry committees and councils, and is also a sought-after speaker at various forums on the subject. So with all that as preamble, Bob Cardoza, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation. I have to clarify one thing, though, that resume hasn't been updated in a bit. I am no longer a certified community manager. That was earlier in my career. I haven't done that for a bit since I moved into more of the business leadership side of our business. But everything else that you said, absolutely.
Well, normally a resume just gets bigger and better with age. You're actually dropping some of these associations.
Well, those things you have to keep up on, and you have to be actually managing communities. And once my career took a shift into the leadership, I wasn't managing communities any longer. So, yeah.
Well, I am going to steer the conversation a little bit, Bob. A little self-serving of me. Like I said, I'm on an HOA board. And we wrestle with all kinds of things like dues and the increase in dues, in the insurance crisis that's going on, properly managing the development, enforcement, and so on. So let's, and then I also want to talk to you, of course, about how do, you know, property investors and developers fit into this whole scheme? Mm-hmm. How do they actually enhance their investment and developments by using associations such as a homeowners association? And we'll talk about the equivalent of an HOA for commercial properties. Let's start with dues, just because this is a thing that gets under everybody's skin. Is this going to be a fair topic for you, Bob? Because dues tend to go up. And you know, the thing about dues is that, yes, they go up. Do homeowners feel that we're getting our money's worth for what we're paying? There's also things like special assessments, which come along, and those really irritate people. Talk about dues a little bit. Is there such a thing as a sweet spot when it comes to HOA dues where they are, you know, affordable for the residents? They don't irritate the residents, but at the same time, it's enough of an income stream that there's proper management of the property, such as making sure the lawns are mowed and the sprinkler system's working properly and somebody's monitoring the pool and so on.
Yeah. You know, Mike, I'm glad you brought this question up. There's a lot to unpack here, right? And it's a straightforward question that's got some layers and some complexity to it. And so I'll try to be kind of comprehensive here. And, you know, whether you and I were just sitting down having dinner as friends and you were on your board asking me some questions, which happens to me often, or you were a client of mine going, hey, Bob, what's going on here? To me, it's the same conversation. I think, first of all, I think that anyone who thinks that an assessment rate that are utilized, like you said, Mike, are utilized to maintain and deliver goods and services, they're there for long-term viability and marketability of the community. Anybody that thinks that they can stay stagnant and never increase, well, that's a fallacy. And I've met people who say, you know, I'm super proud. We've never raised our assessment in 10 years. And I think, yeah, that's a problem, right? Because on one hand, you know, associations are businesses. Like my business, you have headwinds. You have things like rising labor costs. You have incredible increases in insurance costs today. You have legislation that complicates the operations of HOAs all the time. You've got reserve contributions that are in the best interest. And then you have right now these, I'll call extreme either weather or economic events. You got fire, you have floods, you have hurricanes, or you have a banking crisis, or you have 40-year high inflation rates. All of these things impact the association. They're not immune to any of it. Whether they're self-managing a community, okay, they're dealing with all these things, or they're hiring vendors, no matter what vendor they have, they're all dealing with these things and are tough to grapple with. So the thing that you said, sweet spot, to me, that's where you're trying to get. You want to have really good financial planning. You want to ensure that if you do have to increase your assessments from year to year, that it's minimal and it's based on some real quality factual needs, right? And I also think that a sweet spot of an assessment rate, you need to ensure that you have really good vendors in place, you've done really good RFPs, you have value to the spend, and you're thinking about your long-term needs. You can't just budget for today because you never know what's around the corner. So I think good financial planning and analysis is a absolute first step in ensuring that you get value for your assessment rates. I don't know if that helps.
Can answer it does. It does help. But let me ask you, it seems that there's this push and pull. There are the people who say, I just don't want the price to go up, and they're right, willing to see the lawns go brown. And then there's others who say, you know, take care of the place. I'm willing to pay for it because they can afford to pay for it. And oftentimes you have people living on fixed incomes that really can't afford to see increases. And then let's say a special assessment comes along. Let me give you an example. In our case, we had a fire that damaged one of the units. The insurance company said, okay, we'll fix that up and we'll drop the insurance. Then we go out to the market for insurance and a new insurer. And what happens is they notice that in phase one of the development, you've got breaker boxes that are a fire hazard. They're no good. You need to replace all of them. There's a big cost involved in that for each residence. And then overall, even people in other phases have to help underwrite some of it. So now special assessment comes along. And I don't expect you to be able to answer this. This is a very specific case, Bob, but I'll just kind of drop that in your lap.
Yeah.
Maybe watch you squirm a little bit and give me a little bit. Give me something to go on here.
Okay. So let's start with, you know, I know HOAs can get a bad rap. You know, the examples you see on TV, they're very dramatic and they highlight the most extreme, silly situations. And I've been doing this, you know, for over 35 years. I personally oversee, you know, a few thousand associations in my region. And I very rare do you have the extreme situations. Most board members really are volunteering. They really do want to do well for their neighbors. They really do want to give back to the community. The tough thing on a board member is this: they have a responsibility. They have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the values of that association. The association is there to protect and or improve the home values. You know, why are there rules there? There are rules there to protect home values. Why do you have what people sometimes think of command and control? It's protecting home values. And so if you're a board member, you do have an obligation to apply, whether those are policies and guidelines or fiscal responsibility, you have an obligation to apply it consistently across that HOA. Because for every resident who's okay with the grass going brown, you have other residents who are not. And so, you know, you would have a tough time arguing that you can maintain marketability of a community or homes when everything in the common areas are dead. That would be tough. The question you had about special assessments, I've seen what you've described, where in an ideal situation, Mike, you would have had reserve contributions. You would have been socking away a little bit of money for upgrades to systems and components and, you know, various aspects of the community that are going to need repair and or replacement over years. They just do. And so it sounds to me, if I had to bet without seeing what was going on there, is that you didn't have those monies in reserves. And so you were forced to do the thing boards hate to do, which I understand, which is we need immediate cash. And the only way to get immediate cash is to special assess our members to the extent the law allows. And I'm happy to say that that's not an often occurrence, but typically when it occurs, it's because there wasn't any money socked away for the need.
Or the cost was so big that, and what a lot of residents don't understand is that the board members, every time they slap an assessment down or raise dues, they're paying it themselves as well. Yeah. They're on the hook for that. So in fact, we've got a board member, a very conscientious board member who joined the board because he got incensed about a special assessment that happened. He just said, I'm going to join that board and make sure there's some fiscal responsibility put in place. Yeah. And he learned what everybody learns when you're on a board, an HOA board. And that is that there's some things you simply have to pay for that legally you have to be insured and so on and so forth. So let me ask you this, Bob, what about your organization, competitors of yours? You know, you're one of, I'm sure, many players out there in the field. What does your organization do with the existing HOAs? Do you strictly set HOAs up, or do you actually work with existing HOAs?
Yeah, so Mike, both, right? So, you know, the company's kind of growth strategy, if you will, right? Our company grows through a couple of ways. It grows through organic business development. So existing HOAs, you go out in the marketplace every day and you compete. You compete to retain your clients, and you compete to bring clients from your competitors into your house, right? And then we also grow through acquisition, but we don't talk about that. So we
acquisition
work,
as in other property management organizations like your own.
Okay. Yeah, you buy other management companies.
So when you walk onto a scene, I want to try to focus this just a little bit more. When you go walk onto a scene and there's an organization asking for help, the organization that administrates or oversees the HOA board and the development, what's some of the low hanging fruit that you see, or the easy or the obvious issues that you run into that you are able to say, hey, here's some of the changes that can be made, or here's some of the ways you can address things. This might be a more complex question than we have time for right here and now, Bob, but can you give us some insight into that?
Yes. Yeah, so we do take on existing HOAs. We do that every day. We put that process through a consistent onboarding transition plan. And that is because we apply, call it a checklist for simplicity reasons. We apply that to every community we're bringing on board. Now, Mike, if you were unhappy with your service, you would go out and you would do a request for proposal, an RFP, and you would send it to companies like ours, and we would respond to it. And then that RFP, and or in our meeting with you, you would have, you know, some compelling event or events that are creating your dissatisfaction. Sometimes it's the delivery of financial services. Sometimes it's the delivery of, you know, technical solutions. Sometimes it's don't believe you have the highest quality of people. So whatever that might be. So that would be at the top of our list, Mike, is what's on the top of your list? What do you see? Then I would come to you and say, hey, we've gone through our process of kind of due diligence, if you will. Here's some opportunities for you and your community, Mike. Hey, we noticed maybe there are banking solutions that you haven't thought about. Maybe there are different kinds of investments that you could do. Maybe we can help with insurance products. Maybe we can help with, hey, you know what? these vendor RFPs are a little bit loose. You seem to be spending more money than we're accustomed to seeing in a community like yours in some of these areas. When's the last time you've been out to bid on some of these goods and services? Like, we would just methodically walk through that and then provide opportunities for you, right? Here's some things that we see that can make you, your community better. And here's some things that we see kind of long-term that will help you kind of create a healthy, you know, financial health for your community long-term.
So let's say we have an existing management company, mm-hmm. and we're happy with that management company, but every company, you know, can turn to a consultant here and there just to find out how do we optimize our ability to manage these properties as best we can. Do you do that kind of work as well, or is it strictly that you would actually take over management?
Our management company doesn't do that kind of work, but we also operate a consulting company that on occasion does do that kind of work. I typically don't like to go in there and poke holes into other people's stuff. But on occasion, we'll do that through our consulting company.
What about enforcement? That's a big issue because we've got any development has got people who don't like to play by the rules. And so, of course, if you are the actual property owner, you know, why the hell did you buy into a development where there are CCNRs if you're not going to abide by them? And you do understand that these are in place to protect your property value, correct? Are you connecting these dots or not? What about that situation? Because that's, I think, so common with any development out there that you have people that they simply feel like they're being persecuted rather than simply being told, this is what you signed up for, and you need to park your car in the garage, not out in the open.
It's always, I know, frustrating for people. You buy in a certain community, and there's parking restrictions and difficulties, and you're mad because there's nowhere to park. You know, I do think doing due diligence with homeowners and where you're buying and what the rules are is really important. Here's what I do say, whether it's current clients or future clients is this. You know, for every one person that's calling upset with the rules, there are 99 other people who are not calling because they're abiding by them and it's important to them. You know, you don't go into an HOA and just see everybody moving out, you know, just a myriad of U-Haul trailers because nobody wants to live there because the rules are so bad. You don't see that. What we like to tell our boards is, hey, the most important thing, have a good set of guidelines and policies. They need to be in alignment with your legal documents, but they also can be respectful and reasonable. And you need to operate consistently. You can't do something to Mike and then not do it to Bob because you know Bob and he's your neighbor and they did the exact same things. You have to be consistent. Mm-hmm. One, that protects you. And two, you know, you can kind of be bulletproof when people call you out on those things. I also think that it's important for the management company, right? You can either drag people through a process or you can educate them and you can move them through a process with respect and courtesy. A lot of times what people get upset about is they just get some letter that just, you know, hits them right in the face and tells them all the things they can't do versus sometimes educating people, letting them know why the rules exist, having people who are customer service agents that know how to socialize that message in a way that makes people feel okay. You might not love that you got the letter and the fine, but you definitely are going to dislike the scenario more when you've been treated in a less than appropriate way.
Yeah, I understand. So let's talk about there's investors who are listening, Bob. So investors, property managers, developers, does anybody build these days without having a residential community anyway, without having some kind of HOA?
Not really. A vast majority of new development needs an HOA because cities and counties just don't want to be burdened with having to maintain these areas and deal with those things. They don't have the money for it.
Oh, interesting. So it's really so municipalities will say you need to do this. You need to take care of your own piece of the world here.
Yeah, Mike, they would say, hey, Mike, we got it. You're building these 500 homes here. This is wonderful. In order for you to do that in our city or our county, you are going to create an HOA. you are going to self-sustain these things that you're building, and you're going to make sure that this is not going to become a burden onto the county or the city. And so much of the time, it'll be mandated.
So do developers and investors have a smile on their face about HOAs when this all comes into formation? Because it's, hey, look, I'm building this thing. I want the preservation of the property. I want home values to go up and so on and so forth. Even though in some cases they're just selling the property and that's the end of it. Then they, kind of dust off their hands after
I've worked with a lot of builders and developers in my career. That's why I've been a member of like the Urban Land Institute for a very long time. A smile on their face, I don't know. I think what they realize is this is what happens. This is what I have to do. I've been doing this a long time. I understand it. And so it is what's necessary, and they'll do what's necessary to get to the end result. If you're a land developer, your business is to sell land to home builders. And if you're a home builder, your business is to buy land and then build homes to various consumers, and that's your business. And this is just an ends to a mean to them, or means to an end to them, excuse me. And so not ecstatic about it, but they get it. But imagine, Mike, you're a builder and you happen to create an HOA for this new community you're building. You know, Mike, you're going to have to sit on the board, whether you like it or not, or assign people from your company to sit on a board. They don't love doing that. You're going to have to be on there for a while because you're going to be controlling that board for a bit as you're selling your homes. And so you're going to have to be involved in the governance of your community as well. So now you are a home builder / board member. And then sometimes you're wearing those different hats, and that can place those people in some challenging positions. But I would say this, if you're an investor, you and I are looking to invest money, of course we're going to go to a place that, people want to live. You're going to go to nice, attractive places. But I will tell you this, there's a reason why, when people are buying homes and the lenders on those homes are going in and checking to see the viability of that purchase, we're inundated with requests about the operations of an HOA. Is it financially stable? When was the last special assessment? What litigation is happening there? Where do the last 12 months of meeting minutes show us the financial statements? Those people absolutely recognize something that's well run and operating well versus something that is not. And to them, a good run association then means that their investment is safer than one that is just inundated with litigation and special assessments and assessment increases and things of that nature.
Now, you had mentioned that there is an equivalent of a homeowners association for business properties or commercial real estate. Maybe, I don't think it's called a BOA, or is it? What's the nature of it?
No, it could be a business park, could be a commercial owners association.
Is this the same deal where the municipality is likely to say you need to, you create something and take care of the property on your own because the city's not going to do it?
Yeah. And, they're so different. They're so different that we actually manage those two pieces of business differently. There's residential property management. We have a company for that. And then there's commercial property management, a company for that, because they're just different. When you're talking about commercial, it's more straightforward. You don't have kind of the passion around compliance and it's your home and you're having a dispute with your neighbor or you're using the facilities and you're not happy with this or that. Commercial HOAs or business parks are pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of amenities. There's not a lot of things to maintain. There's not a lot of interaction with those owners so long as they're paying those assessments and that the business park, if you will, is being maintained and up and kept up. And it's pretty straightforward.
Interesting. So what's the takeaway for investors and developers who are listening to this podcast, Bob? What would you maybe say if you were to bullet point a few things that to really keep in mind, or maybe some best practices for them to observe?
Mike, I've had the fortune of being around some really talented, passionate land developers and home builders during my career, and some really great communities. One of the things I would say in my experience, the value that an HOA can bring to the overall community experience is more often than not overlooked. Most of the time they look at it as, okay, I'm being made to do this. It's just costing more money. And I really just want to get this done and move forward. But the most successful community or high-rise developers that I've ever worked with, they have this one thing in common, and it is they absolutely seek and sometimes demand of you that you uncover and apply the value of a well-planned, well-operated association can bring. Whether it's the experience the resident's going to have because you're developing an amenity-rich community that's offering all kinds of lifestyle and experiences, whether they want you to mitigate risk by having really good financial planning and good governance modeling, you're helping them sell homes, you're helping them propel their brand. You know, those folks see the HOA as a vehicle of success because there's only one thing that's going to remain there long after they've sold their last land or sold their last home. The thing that remains that's the vehicle of sustainability of their brand or their promise is that HOA. It's the one entity that stays, that ends up owning and operating everything. And if it's been well-planned and well-operated, then you can go visit a community 20 years later and it will be as vibrant and marketable as it was day one. You know, and so I would say if you're a developer or home builder is look at that opportunity to extract some value out of it, you know. And that's why we work with developers and builders in the pre-planning stages. You know, some of the larger communities that we work on, we might work on those a year before they ever even have residents there because those land developers or those home builders want us to really plan them well. And we go through a lot of work with them. You know, it could be amenities, it could be financial planning, lots of different elements to it. But the folks that they often will call us in early to help them with that.
What about bottom line amenities? What are the bottom line amenities? In other words, what amenities are a must? Or are there some developments where they say, look, we're not going to mess with tennis courts, pools, pickleball, a community center. We're going to have residences and a really well-maintained property. And we're basically not offering any amenities.
So
are you out of business if you do that? I mean, is it basically your development is not going to look too attractive vis-a-vis others?
You know, it's interesting, Mike. It depends on the kind of community, the kind of developer or home builder you are, right? You know, if you are like today, if you're a home builder or land developer, you know that the biggest segment of your consumer base is going to be 55 and plus. It's the acceleration of that age group that has not only the wealth, but then is moving into a place in their life where they want to downsize, move into these kinds of communities. So you're going to see and continue to see 55 plus better communities coming up. They're heavily amenitized because folks want all those amenities. Pickleball is a must.
Tennis courts. That's a new hot one.
Yeah, tennis courts these days are all being converted to pickleball courts, you know. But you can go into communities these days, Mike, and you're walking into these mini cities. They have water parks in them, skateboard parks in them, theaters in them. They have, you know, clubhouses that range from 20 to 50,000 square feet that have every kind of amenity you could think of. Some have restaurants, bars, you know, some have enormous fitness centers, spa centers. You know, it's interesting, Mike. I'll tell you, when I first started in this business, it was kind of property management. You know, how green is the grass? How blue is the water in the pool? Our business today, yeah, is about maintaining the properties. But a bulk of what our company provides, a company like ours provides, is the resident experience. What are people doing while they're living in those communities? How are you activating those amenities? What are you doing to kind of wring out the value that residents, consumers were promised when they put down that money to go move into that community? They had some kind of promise made to them, some visual as to what their life was going to be like. And just because you build stuff doesn't mean it's just organically going to happen. Our job is to go in and make it happen, to activate it. And so today, you know, Mike, I have communities that have one-sided general manager. Okay. I've got communities that have 100 people there every single day doing nothing but delivering lifestyle and resident services. 100. It can vary that much. And even, Mike, you go into a high-rise, you go into New York City or you go into San Francisco, you can go into high-rises and the level of amenities that they put in the buildings are just second to none. people don't have to leave there, you know, just incredible amenities for people to enjoy while living there.
People interesting. You know, yeah, people, and that's the bottom line is, you have to pay for them. If that's the lifestyle you want, then that's the price you pay. One last question, Bob. You are sought after as a speaker at various conferences, as I said at the top. What subject or subjects do you speak on when you're in front of these audiences with relation to managing commercial and residential properties? What are some of the topics that you hit?
Yeah, most often it is operational planning readiness. You know, I could be invited by a land developer to come onto a panel and talk alongside them in terms of, you know, what we did operationally to deliver the experience that the residents are having there. Most of the time I'm sought after for operational pre-planning, you know, kind of expertise in amenity uses, amenity design. It's mainly things of that nature. It's just people wanting to know what are good habits that create a well-operated association that delivers on the promises perpetually.
Our guest has been Bob Cardoza. Again, he is president of First Service Residential. He is responsible for the West region of the organization. First Service Residential is a property management company for both residential and commercial properties. We've been having a heated conversation about HOAs and the business equivalent. Not heated between Bob and me, simply saying that obviously, Bob, you probably detected a little bit of frustration in my voice about some of these subjects, and your ability to bring some light to the discussion, very much appreciated. Thank you for taking the time.
It was my pleasure, Mike. Anytime at all, I enjoyed the conversation.